Welcome to the Mira Wine Podcast, Vin Compétent, with Josh, Bryce, and Leah.
What?
The podcast where we drink, talk, and discuss natural wine. And whatever else comes to mind.
Who are these jokers?
Hope you're ready for this, because I know we weren't.
And I was getting one.
And in 3, 2, 1, we're live.
Hello.
We are live.
Bryce, I sound a little quiet. Is that just to me?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Your number.
I'll deal with
it. Is that better?
Yeah.
You're good. You're good in my ears.
Yeah, good.
Welcome to Mira Wine Presents. Did I say that right? Yeah. Mira Wine Presents. Vin Compétent. Josh, Bryce, and Leah. Sponsored by Water Construction. And Funtime Meat Sauce.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys see my post I did yesterday? I did a post.
No, what was your
on
post?
On Mira Wine.
That was you?
Yeah.
I thought it was Leah, though.
What did you do?
I made craft dinner when I got home last night, and I ate it with the Funtime Smoker's Cop Heat Sauce.
Oh, sweet.
I'm laughing because, like, you know, like, if you know something about food and wine, people are always nervous to have you come over to their house. Like, oh, fuck, like, what am I going to make? I'm like,
yeah.
I want you to make whatever, like, the most easy thing. Like, I don't care. So I posted a thing. I was like, and people are worried to have me over to their house for dinner. Like, I'm eating, like, not even the original Katie, like, extra cheese one with hot sauce.
You're eating, like, the white cheddar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the shells.
I did drink it with cake Franco's, which is really cool.
I mean, you did drink. You're eating the fancy craft dinner.
I know.
Yeah.
You are one step above more people.
You need to go just like classic original where it's orange.
Yeah.
It's like fluorescent.
Fluorescent orange.
Yeah. But I did a post.
That's
you
awesome.
Did.
Leslie was like, you should take a picture. I was like, oh, okay. Put a filter on it and everything. It took me like 3 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, good job, Josh.
Boat time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's speed things along here. Get into the Biodynamic James calendar.
Challenge.
Sponsored by Water Construction for all your summer water slide needs.
Ooh, made out of wood?
It's hot.
A wooden water slide.
Yes. Whoa, that sounds like Sliver Central.
I feel like the first water slides would have been wooden, no?
You think so?
Like, you would have had like some kind of carpet.
Wouldn't they have been like steel or something like that? And just completely roast you in the sun.
Right? That's why they needed to put water down it.
Yeah. It was originally a slide.
That's how it was created. Yeah. It was a slide.
Black metal slide.
Yes.
Couple kids got burned.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, let's put some water down
Let's put some cold water down it.
Love it.
And then a couple of kids flew off the end and got hurt. And then they harnessed the power, and now Water Construction makes them
out of wood.
Wood.
They'll build the frame for sure. I don't know. I mean, it's not that they build everything out of wood. Let's get back to this.
You're right.
Why does it have to be out of wood?
You're right.
Showerhead wood.
Remember the picture we posted
of
their house?
Can you imagine you hire them and fucking everything's made out of wood.
Everything.
In the whole house. The bed, the mattress.
Why don't the lights work? They're wood.
The light bulb is made out of wood.
It's going to save you a ton of energy.
But you'll never
just
be able to
see
the
windows.
It's a bunch of wooden cutlery.
There aren't any windows. They're all wood.
There are windows, but you have to like literally open them.
Right. Yeah. And so in Saskatchewan, your house is always filled with bugs.
Always.
Gross. Well, cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Let's see where the biodynamic calendar is at today.
Ooh.
We should do those asthma videos.
This could be a... we should do what?
Those videos where you get too close to the microphone and you like whisper into it.
Oh.
You do weird
things. ASMR?
Yeah, asthma.
Mm.
Oh.
It's like people like crinkling.
It's like audio sensory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Anyways.
Is it like a sexual thing?
No, not at all.
It is to me.
Yeah?
Just like someone...
Has it always done that to you?
Crinkling a candy wrapper?
You're like, oh, yeah.
And I was getting
wood. Turned me on.
I didn't even have to press the button. Look at that.
Okay.
What do you guys think? So I want to know. Okay, I want to know what's going
on in your mind.
Yeah, I want to know what your personal processes are, because I think it tastes pretty good today. So like, if it was a wine, I would be like, oh, it's probably a flower day. But I feel like I've reversed those lately, and I've been doing good. Do you know what I mean?
So do you think, is there a flavor you're looking for a flower day? Or
like if it's like kind of woody, but not super, like when it's the worst, I think it's a fruit day.
When it's the worst?
Yeah.
Oh, so like when there's no caramel.
We used to think when it was really, really caramelly, that's when it was a flowered or a fruit day. But now you're changing. Now you're saying the opposite. So it's almost like if you think it's a flower day, go the opposite.
Yeah.
Well, what's the opposite of a flower day?
It would be a leaf day, I think.
It'd be a leaf day.
Oh,
yeah. Right. I agree.
Okay.
I mean, it's to me, it feels like it's somewhere in between, like not super expressive and expressive, but it leans to the leaf.
Mm-hmm. To me, it's a gamble. I'm basically selecting one of four.
What do I feel like?
Because there's no science behind this.
Proving that throughout this podcast last 2 years.
This is a scientific process, Leah. Okay.
Well, I actually think it is a flower day today.
Okay.
I think it's a leaf day.
Leaf day. I'm going to go nothing day. I'm gonna go nothing day, but
I always forget about nothing day.
Why choose nothing day? Yeah. I just want to say that
because I think it tastes like nothing today.
What? Oh, I got a little bit of spice.
Mm. Yeah, I got some spice.
Interesting. I always forget about nothing day.
Okay, ready?
That's because there's no point in picking it.
Why?
Flower day.
Ah! Yes. Yes.
That's fine.
Yes. See,
I bet it's a gamble. It's
a full gamble.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Okay. What are we drinking today?
I don't know. You bought it.
I bought it. I did zero research on it. Leah did the research. It was an impulse buy.
It's a good thing I did the research on it. Mm. I got your back.
We're drinking Hugel or Hugel?
We're drinking something very far outside of our normal drinking patterns on this podcast.
For a few reasons. Number one, the reason why I bought it is because I do love German and Alsatian Pinot Noirs.
Me too.
We have none here. Mm-hmm. We have that one we have at Homestead Spätburgunder from Selbach Oster, but we have zero Alsatian Pinots.
Yeah.
We've had the one from Dürer Kedde, which was very good.
And we've tasted the one from Brett's that Opimian used to bring in.
Yes, and
that
lovely.
Was delicious.
There was one that, I can't remember the name of it, but the name of the wine was E, like a letter E.
Mm-hmm.
It was a biodynamic wine. I had it like, I want to say like 18 years ago.
Yeah.
You got it off Sesame Street.
Yeah. It was sponsored by Warner Construction and the letter E.
On today's podcast, the letter E.
I can't remember, but that was like really good too.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not drinking, we're drinking an Alsatian Pinot Noir, but not really our style of winery per se.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the reason that we automatically think that though is because Hugel is known as like a really big producer in Alsace.
They've got to be the biggest.
They're one of the biggest.
Yeah.
But that's because they're also a négociant.
Okay.
So they for certain lines of their wines, they're buying the grapes.
Right.
And then they're making wine from it. Their Pinot is an example of that. But they do have their own Grand Cru vineyard sites. So I think in this case, you actually have to know about the producer rather than making an assumption that, hey, this is a big producer, therefore they don't fall in line with some of our philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
They actually, what was really interesting about them is they have their own classification system. So mm-hmm. even though they have Grand Cru vineyards, they don't classify them as Grand Cru.
Oh, see, I like them already.
They have, and so this is like they're doing their own thing. So they basically have three classifications that you would be getting from this family. If it says classic on the label, it means that those are bought grapes. So they're actually working with farmers, buying grapes, and then making the wine.
So anything that says classic on a Hugel is négociant.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what the Pinot that we're drinking today mm-hmm. is that. Then next up from there is tradition, and it doesn't specify whether they're their grapes or whether they're purchased grapes, mm-hmm. But they have to be made from the four noble whites from Alsace.
Okay.
So Gewürztraminer, Riesling, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc. Yeah.
Is there, what about Pinot Osserwa? That's not one of the noble ones?
Not one of the noble ones. So, likely there might blend a little bit, mm-hmm. but typically if it's labeled tradition, it would be made from one of the four nobles.
So there cannot be a tradition red then?
Correct.
Okay, only
correct, white. Because also Pinot Noir is not a classified varietal there. So any mm-hmm. Grand Cru outside of even this producer can't be Pinot. Pinot Noir vineyards are not classified.
So there's no Grand Cru reds?
No, not in Alsace.
Would Pinot Noir be the kind of the red
it is. It is the red wine.
Are there any other ones?
It's cool enough there to grow it too.
Well, right? What's actually interesting about that is it's actually grown in popularity in terms of production in Alsace. It was historically too cold. The growing season wasn't long enough for mm-hmm. Pinot Noir to fully ripen.
Mm-hmm.
But because of climate change, it's a little bit longer of a growing season. So they're actually able to produce. And so since around the 1980s, I guess, Pinot Noir plantings have doubled.
How long till we can do that in Saskatchewan?
next year.
How many more, you know, how tons freaking of hard it is
this year? Based off of what's going on here.
We would kill Pinot at this point in the year.
We'd be growing Syrah this year.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's so hot.
We'll be making.
Yeah.
We're making Syrah. Like, it's been dry and hot.
It actually hasn't been dry. It's been super humid here. It's been windy. I guess that's on our side.
I heard we got less.
For the people who watch at home in the video, it's been a little humid.
A little humid.
Look at this thing.
It actually looks a little better than it did yesterday.
Because I've been wearing a hat all day.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I've heard we got less rain this year. Like, we had just over enough rain to not classify Saskatchewan as a desert this year.
Just over.
Yeah. It's like a desert gets like, I don't know, something like 26 millimeters a year, and we're at like 30.
Crazy. Yeah, it's been pretty hot.
It's hot.
Okay, but going back to the classification. Yes. So classic would be purchased grapes. Tradition would be noble varietals. And then anything that is labeled Jubilee are the Ugel's Grand Cru vineyards.
Mm. Okay.
So it doesn't matter.
Their own vineyards. Yeah, they're no-bought their own grapes. Vineyards.
Yeah,
exactly. And that would be, so I don't know if you know this, but for Grand Cru classification, let's say outside the Ugel classification, so like Alsatian Grand Cru, does it have to be the four noble whites?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't know the rules. I don't know the answer to that. I would actually probably say yes.
I would imagine. Or like, would you be allowed to add a little bit of
Small
Pinot
percentage.
Osterwa?
I would imagine it would be percentage based. So, you know, if you're doing a Grand Cru Riesling, it has to be at least, I'm just throwing out numbers, 90% Riesling. And if you want it to blend with a little bit.
Right.
But I don't know that. That's actually something that we should confirm. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I was just reading the back of this bottle. This is a natural wine.
Sweet.
Natural, non-treated, because they talk about the sediment in it.
Love it.
So it does fall in line.
Well, no. Read.
I didn't read the rest of it.
It says this wine may show a slight sediment of tartaric crystals, which it does in the cork.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A sign of natural, non-treated wine. A sign.
Sign.
So that could be like, you could put that on Apothic.
You could put it on anything.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it's not like,
and then
doesn't,
you claim
you think this tastes like Apothic red?
No.
No, this definitely does not.
So they only have three classifications.
They only have three, But in Alsace, there's only two.
Because there's...
You're either like just an Alsace.
Regular
like,
or Grand Cru.
Or Grand Cru,
And, but they have quite a bit of Grand Cru, like Alsatian classified Grand Cru vines. I wonder what their high-end wine tastes like.
The Ugel's?
Yeah.
I think it would be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to try it.
I've had their wine many times in my life. I don't think I've ever had any of their Jubilee, but like...
I've had some of their Tradition.
Mm-hmm. I've never had one where I was like, oh, wow, like this is great.
But I also do think though, they make very like varietal and region specific. Like if you are looking for what Alsatian Pinot Gris tastes like, this would be a producer that you would recommend.
And I will say that this wine is good.
Yeah, it's good.
Like, it's good. It's kind of clean and crisp. That's what I want from an Alsatian Pinot. It's got a little bit of cardboardy on the nose, though, for me.
Mm.
Like wood.
It's a little flat.
I actually think that's, to be honest, I don't think it's any sort of cork taint. I think that's just the wood.
Yeah. Like I don't think it's faulted. I just think that's
the
way it tastes.
Yeah. One of the cool things, though, so if we talk about people, like we work with some producers like Klaus Pressinger in Austria, who's very much about like moving Austrian wine forward, right? We work with Louis-Antoine Lewitt, again, about moving Chilean wines forward. And it's definitely on the natural wine scene. But in terms of Ugel, they have been historically one of those families that have continued to try and push forward Alsatian wines to the point where, so there are two types of sweet wines that you can get. Vendange Tardif, and I can't pronounce the other one, but it's an SGN. And so basically there are sweet wines that are made, and the way that they're made in terms of how the classification was developed is actually known as Ugel's Law.
Oh, wow, cool. Oh,
so they were the ones that said, hey, you know, these are the two, like if you're making a sweet wine, here's how you would do it. And that's what was adopted as those classifications. And that was back in the 1980s. So there's like some, they've been around since the 17th century.
Right.
But there's some cool history in terms of how they're contributing to the Alsatian wine community.
Well, and that's super cool because like, yes, they're a mammoth producer. Big. They're huge, but like taking some of that money and putting it essentially back into the community. Zinn Humbrecht would be another great example. They border more on biodynamic.
Yes. I think they are biodynamic.
They are, yeah. Like, he's actually, like, on the board. Yeah. Like, I think he's, like, he, like, started, like, the biodynamic association for Alsatian producers, whatever. But I wonder, like, what kind of relationship that they would have with them. Like, it'd be cool if it was, like, super collaborative. Because Alsace isn't, like, it's not a juggernaut for winemaking.
It's not huge. And so even, like, if we talk about this being a huge producer, it's a huge producer in Alsace. How does that compare to some of the bigger producers in some of the other countries? Right. Like how does that compare to Perrin?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, like, I wonder if they're collaborative or competitive. Collaboration is a new competitive.
Well, Alsace seems to be like TM. The kind of area, the kind of region that doesn't really fit anywhere, like traditionally. Mm-hmm. Like, they're kind of apart from France, they're kind of apart from Germany.
Well, they've been part of each country.
And they've
so many
been
times.
Part of each country. And so, like, I'm kind of wondering if their own classification system is kind of like a snub at that.
Oh, that's a
They're
good
just
question.
Like, hey, guys, we don't care.
You let us know what country we're part of. We're going to do our own thing.
Yeah. Like, I give a crap about your own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm going to make it up. Just by the way the countryside looks and the houses, much more German.
Much more German.
Wine. Climate, much more German. But culture, I feel like it's more French.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't it funny that Germany and France are side by side and could not be more opposite in terms of what the stereotypical person is?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, French people
what
are
you
like,
think
it's
about
like poetic and like everything's about like your feeling and the sense. And Germany's like robots.
Right.
Like,
just tastes like this.
Yeah.
You know what that makes me think about? So
like the German classification system. There's no fucking...
There's no like, wiggle
there's
room
no,
there.
There's, it's like
no,
these
there's
are the
no,
rules.
There's no gray. It's black or white. Yeah. It's yes or no. There's nothing in between.
And 1,000 different classifications.
Not 1,000.
Yeah. And try
it. No, there's not.
We just bought
no,
a new... That,
no, there's
that,
not.
That Riesling, I can't even pronounce it, but from Selbach Osser, I can't even fucking fit it on my wine list. Because it's like Zinnenhur, Sonnenhur, Zeppelin. It's like the longest fucking names in the world.
Then you're looking at it wrong to be able to put it on a wine list.
Yeah.
You're trying to put it all on the wine list.
Of
you
course.
Don't need to put it all on the wine list.
All or nothing.
You guys know I love Myers-Briggs. Mm-hmm. And like I love like typing because I feel
can
like
can you type countries?
Well, that's what I was just thinking about. I
of course
was like,
you can.
And maybe not specifically, but definitely I would say Germans are STs, which are like the like it's black and white, it's right and wrong. Actually, even STJs.
J's, yeah. Yeah. Well, they're judging.
Like
they're judgy.
Like, yeah.
They're introverts.
They're
as well.
Also so incredibly concise. Mm-hmm. Everything is linear and clean and crisp, and it's like efficient. Efficient, if like.
So they're eyes for sure.
No. I don't think you could classify a country. There's actually studies that show that certain countries are more extroverted or more introverted. Mm-hmm. But
like
I don't
all South American countries, extroverts. All Latin countries, extroverts.
More extroverted, yes. Mm. Not extroverts.
African countries, extroverts.
And again, not all,
I don't
but percentage-wise.
I think percentage-wise, I don't think it would change that much.
What would you guess Canadians would be?
I think we're extroverts.
50-50?
Bryce is closer. I think it's like 55-45 for being more introverted.
Really?
Yeah. And I would say probably all the countries that you mentioned would probably be like 60-40.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're like me.
No.
Like imagine a country of me.
You're just thinking what of country? Like, what country do you love to go to?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, imagine like you went to a country and everyone's like me. Like, hey, there's a new guy.
Oh my gosh, I'd be exhausted after 5 minutes.
Hey, everybody, come out. Meet the new guy.
See you later.
Oh.
I'm getting back on the plane.
Going back to like Germany and France, that I it's probably the TJ and the FP. Like I think French, it's more about like feeling
it's
and the
feeling.
Romance
Imagine
sure.
So imagine you fly to the Josh country. And then you're landing at the airport and the pilot goes, all right, guys, welcome to Josh Country. I'm going to be having drinks at this bar tonight. So everyone on the plane's invited and you can come to my house for dinner and for a sleepover. Okay.
That's what it would be like.
I really, really hope I see you on your
trip. Here's my address and my phone number. Text me anytime. We're now best friends.
Yes, exactly. If you need a ride back home, let me know.
And when I come to Canada, I'll see you there.
Yeah.
When's your birthday? Don't just add me on Facebook.
Yeah.
We'll talk.
Send me a handwritten letter.
Yes.
Give me your phone number letters. So we can FaceTime.
I want to FaceTime. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I just want to point that out. Josh FaceTimes at the most inopportune times.
Well, he just always
for himself.
I FaceTime everyone.
For I know.
Himself. Like, yeah, like it's just like
just it, sitting there.
I'll FaceTime you, but it's just like the ceiling because I have the phone on the ground.
Why are you FaceTiming me? Just phone me.
I just, it's a, like, what an incredible 10 years ago, when you were a kid, you're watching Star Trek, right? And they have, like, you're like, oh my God, a video chat. Now we can just fucking do that all the time. It's incredible. It's incredible.
But it's such a waste when you do it.
Okay, so, like the day, like, how far are we away from self-driving cars? Or, like, a whoosh, like the door that slides
10
up.
10 years.
And, yeah. A door that slides up.
Tops.
Tops. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Tesla already has self-driving cars, but 10 years before they can drive legitimately on the road.
Okay.
Should I hold out?
No.
See if my crews can last.
No, it's a software upgrade, so.
I worry about self-driving cars.
If everybody has a self-driving car.
Because
I worry about Josh driving cars.
If humans can intervene in the self-driving car, it becomes more dangerous.
So do you think a human could react quicker than a computer?
No, I think a computer can, but I think what if the car is reacting and the human catches up to that and does something contrary to what the car is trying to do, then shit just hits the fan. I don't know.
But even if you're going, let's say 50 self-driving and 50 people are driving human, I wonder what the percentage would be. Mm. Because the self-driving car is always going to do the safest thing.
She's saying on top of it. So the self-driving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The question really is the self-driving car going to put you off a cliff or kill all the kids? Because that's like the theoretical test.
My robot shit.
Yeah, that's the theoretical test.
How do you program that?
Is that what's that called? Is that like the, it's like the, there's something that's like you know.
If you could tell if the computer's human or not.
No. It's like, is it called the theoretical test where it's like, okay, so you can either, you have two options. You can either kill 5 people you know or 100 people you don't know. What do you do? It's like the moral obligation test or something like that.
Right, yeah.
Oh,
right.
It's not theoretical, it's morals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Right.
Yeah. Right? So the computer's gonna kill 5 people you know.
Yeah.
Because that makes more sense.
Right.
But I would probably kill 100 people I don't know.
Right, so I guess the real question is self-preservation or not, right?
Bryce kills everyone.
I kill everyone.
And I'm thinking, I don't kill anybody, I'd kill myself.
I wouldn't kill everybody. I just kill people I don't know.
Can I kill 2 people I know and then 50 people I don't know?
Bryce would negotiate for sure.
Yeah, exactly, I would. And I would get it down.
Yeah, because eventually the devil would be like, you know what, fuck it, man, do what you want.
I don't care, man.
You're gonna Patrick Genoway him.
Yep.
You know what, I'll just buy it if you leave me alone.
He's like, you're gonna be here in 5 years anyway, it's okay. Yeah.
Hilarious.
I'm like, okay.
Well, we got a little bit off track.
It's because this is a human-driven car and not a computer-driven car.
Computer-driven car would be German and we'd be done by now.
We'd be done the podcast.
If we let Leah actually run the show without interrupting her.
German? I am,
She
actually.
Thought she was.
You're right, I thought I was, and apparently I'm Polish.
Great segue.
Great segue. Well, what I think is interesting. So we're drinking Pinot Noir from Alsace. It's not super popular, but it is a
Alsace.
Alsace. Like brioche.
Alsace.
But it is like fun to discover and delicious. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about different wine, like food and wine pairing. We've talked about that in the past. And what like some crazy or challenging food and wine pairings would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh. So throw some out there.
Okay, well,
we don't have to get
going back to Hang going on. Back to finding out that you know, was I German or Polish or or whatever. I think a lot of people who live in Saskatchewan have a like Polish Ukrainian heritage. Mm-hmm. So whether like whatever family get together, you're going to be eating like pierogies, cabbage rolls, sausage.
Did you know I never had a pierogi before I moved here?
No,
I didn't even know what it was until I met a girl named Fallon from Winnipeg.
Blows
Are
my mind.
Are you
like
20, kidding me?
22 years old, and she was like, "Can we get some pierogies?" And I was like, "I don't even know what that is."
Never heard of it.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. How do you eat your pierogies, by the way?
Whatever.
We were talking about, you had like a sauce.
No, I don't. I
challenge.
Like, I feel like I want to have a dipping sauce for pierogies, but I like, as I was telling you guys, I feel like I want to have like a Japanese, like I want it to be a dumpling and it's not.
Mm. Oh,
do you know what I mean? Because I like those.
Yeah. So how does your, how are they cooked? Because that's like an important part.
So my mother-in-law will like boil them.
Yeah.
And then do like fried onions with butter and sour cream and dill.
Does she toss them in the pan with the butter and onions?
Yeah. Like, so you boil them and then you pan fry them a little bit, so a little just bit crispy on the outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like, she makes them good.
We always have half and half. We always have just boiled, mm-hmm. and then we have fried. So we boil them, then fry them, and then you can add your own onions and butter and sour cream.
I will say, you know what I like to put on them is cream corn.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That sounds like a real Ukrainian thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like at Christmas, they do like the whole...
Okay, so you had pierogies, mm-hmm. and you eat pierogies regularly now mm-hmm. that you live in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. What would you pair with like pierogies and cabbage rolls? Like, how do you...
Mm-hmm. Cabbage rolls is way tougher than pierogies.
You're right, cabbage rolls would be tougher.
I think for pierogies, I would do like maybe some Chardonnay.
You go white?
I'd go white. I'd go like Chablis.
Mm, I'd go red.
Or Meursault.
You'd go red for pierogies?
I would go red.
What are your pierogies stuffed with? Just classic like potato. And sauerkraut?
Maybe potato and onion.
Potato and onion, okay.
I wouldn't go sauerkraut. Sauerkraut pierogies would be a different beast.
They would be. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. Have you ever had, what's the other one that they...
cottage cheese. Before?
Cottage cheese, yeah, and there's another one.
Potato and cheese.
No. Like, it was like, it's something like tart, like sauerkraut or like sour. I'll think of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I would go red.
Though.
Would you do like the pousse libre?
No.
What would you do?
I would do something with more tannin.
Why?
Really? Well, because think about how much fucking butter you just put on your pierogi.
Yeah. Think about needing acidity.
You need acidity, but you also need some tannin.
No.
Yeah.
What about orange wine?
Yeah. Orange wine goes good with a lot of shit.
That's 100% incorrect. To pair tannin and butter together, that's 100% wrong, like scientifically wrong.
That's why I got a better grade than you on the WSET.
We got the exact same grade. Remember?
Well, remember what my grade was?
92? Yeah, wow. 96.
94. 94. Thank you.
Mine was 83.
Okay.
86.
What about cabbage rolls?
Cabbage rolls... I don't know.
So your cabbage
rolls are doing tomato.
Like tomato sauce, right? But it's like, oof, yeah.
Are they sour cabbage, though?
Okay, so let's assume not sour cabbage.
Mm.
Sour cabbage? Can I go sour cabbage? Because I would do an Alsatian wine.
Cool.
I think I would do like an Alsatian Pinot Blanc or something, but not like...
With sour cabbage.
Yeah, but no sweetness.
Yep.
Like dry. Like yep. Full fermentation. You'd have to go dry.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like one of those, like those Zin Hamburgs we had that were like fucking
what,
bomb.
What about like going a Pinot Blanc, so it's even more acidic?
Yeah, I would do Pinot Blanc. I would do a Zin Hamburg Pinot Blanc. What's that one we had? We had the
Pinot Gris.
Pinot Gris, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would do
Bryce,
that.
Bryce, what would you do?
Because they do,
I don't
they,
even know.
They have cabbage, a lot of cabbage based dishes in Alsace. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a tough one. Cabbage rolls, just there's...
I'd go Sangiovese.
Sangiovese.
Yeah, I was gonna say like mm-hmm. maybe like a yeah.
Like if I'm thinking about like the tomato and the green.
Oh, so you went Italian.
Yeah.
Mm.
With cabbage rolls. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I would do for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Italian wine would probably be really, really good.
Yeah.
A little more fruit forward.
Yeah, but the acidity would still be there for the tomato.
Yeah, I mean that's all I think about though with food.
Is just acidity.
It's just like acidity. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like it doesn't really
for
matter.
Sure.
Right.
For sure.
Especially since. A lot of the wines that we're drinking now are all highly acidic.
Yeah.
Right?
Not all are. So maybe that's the thing. Okay. What about Mexican food?
That's a tough one.
Because like really, I just think about drinking like a really nice, light, cold beer.
Yeah.
Right.
But what if you're gluten-free and you can't drink beer and gluten-free beer is shit?
Drink rosé.
Ooh.
With Mexican food.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like... Like, are we talking, like, not Tex-Mex? So, like, I'm getting a taco in Mexico.
Yeah.
Beef.
Yeah.
Spicy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I might want to do, like, a Gewürztraminer.
That makes sense.
Sweetness.
That makes sense, too. But I'm with Bryce. I would, like, do Provence. Provence rosé.
A rosé, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something you
but,
get
but a Gewürztraminer, too? Yeah?
Because I'm just thinking, like, there's, like, and I'll throw in, like, Vietnamese and Thai food into this and Indian food. There's so much going on. There's so many spices and flavor profiles that I feel like Gewürztraminer can like compete with that because it's so spicy as well.
I think
floral.
And I wonder if like do you want to compete with that? Because if you think of like Indian food too, it's so aromatic. It's so like do you want
aromatic,
a wine to compete with that, or do you want a wine to just like elevate the flavor?
I was just gonna say that. I was like, for most of these hard to pair foods. You have to stop thinking about wanting the wine to shine and think about the food.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So I have a comment to make. about this whole thing because I was thinking about it. And like, do you think that foods like Eastern European foods, Indian food, Mexican food, not traditionally wine regions? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the food doesn't pair with wine because they don't have wine there.
Even we were talking about sushi, like Japanese food, or right? Just really delicate that's Japanese
goes
food.
Goes great with sake.
Like, what kind of wine are you going to put with that that's actually going to do it any justice?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
And, but then I think I've shared before, I have sort of like two golden rules when it comes to food and wine pairing. Mm-hmm. One is drink what you like.
Yep.
Because if you don't like the wine, you're not going to like the pairing. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But number two, drink what is in the region. Mm-hmm. Right? So yep. Whatever if it style of it food. It, yeah.
It's so just vodka for pierogies and
I guess so.
Like, but no, shit vodka. It's gonna be shit.
It's gonna
vodka.
Be, it's gonna be in a steel cup.
And maybe that's why we're having.
You have to
the
drink
argument.
It outside, yeah. Or inside while you're burning stuff to keep your house heated.
First, you gotta throw a bunch of dirt on your face, and
it is interesting. Like, it's like those cross border food and wine pairings, right? Mm-hmm. It is because it's so ingrained in the history of these countries that started out as clans, basically. Like, mm-hmm. Of course, Sangiovese goes with tomato sauce. Of mm-hmm. fucking course it does. Mm-hmm. They've been doing that for 1,000 years, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, pairing up Indian food, let's say, with a wine from Germany, mm-hmm. well... it's cool to do, but is it ever really good? Like
what? It's not going to be perfect.
Yeah, like what do they drink in India?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they don't drink a bunch of booze there, I don't think, but
yeah.
What do they drink with Indian food? Is it beer? Right?
Right.
Is it like some kind of like, I don't know, like fruit drink?
Yeah. Probably.
There's got to be something that you're
I'm
like,
not
oh,
totally
yeah,
sure. I feel like it would be like grain-based alcohol there.
And to be honest with you, like, have you ever had fucking Eastern European food with vodka? It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're
caviar and vodka
wasted, and you best. Don't think about it.
No, but even just like
it's like it's cleansed, like it's cleansing. Actually cleansing, yeah, cleansing, which sounds really weird. <Yeah. laughs> Okay, I mean? So we're drinking Alsatian Pinot Noir. Think mm-hmm. about like what would you pair with this? Not let so let's do it this way. What kind of food do you want to be eating?
I'm going to read the back of the label here.
Don't do that.
So this would be a good Ukrainian pairing to me.
I agree.
Because
yeah.
You put like sausage and you would like very like fatty meaty. Foods mm-hmm. and then pierogies.
Can I get really specific?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No.
Yeah, no. You have to be as vague as possible.
And some of it is going to be cliche, but some of it might be like completely irrelevant. I want like a brioche bun with bratwurst,
brioche,
yellow mustard, mm-hmm. and caramelized onions.
Mm-hmm. Like I want like a pretzel with caramelized onions, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, with bratwurst sausage.
Oh, yeah.
She wants a hot dog.
I want a hot dog.
Yeah.
Dumb it down. All she wants is a hot dog.
You want a sausage 100%. And a pretzel bun with mustard is what you just described.
She just wants a hot dog with mustard. Yeah.
You were
vague. That's what I want.
That would be good.
If she could get this at the Chicago Cubs Stadium with a hot dog with yellow mustard, she'd be happy.
You pair this with a dog from Chicago Cubs Stadium and then a fist fight.
And then a fist fight.
And the Alsace.
That's happened before.
I think like I'm thinking more of like some kind of like cassoulet with this, like
really?
Pork, like pork cassoulet. Yeah,
that would be good too.
Mm-hmm. Something with some beans, a little bit of sweetness.
You said hot dog. Cassoulet. You said hot dog, and that's all I can think about now.
Yeah,
that's all I want to eat.
But you love hot dogs.
I love hot dogs.
You can't eat them.
Is that your biggest like?
The We've thing talked you would about eat
the
most? Yeah.
Hot dogs. Hot dogs and like the cheap burger from McDonald's. Yeah. Those are the first things I would eat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
You should write a letter to McDonald's to do like a wild game.
Wild game.
Cheeseburger for $2.
Just do local. Beyond Meat burger. Like, I don't care.
No, not Beyond Meat.
I like those burgers.
Really?
Yeah. They satisfy my need.
So next time we're in Saskatoon.
It's like vaping.
Let's
smoke cigarettes.
Just light it up, bro.
Just smoke a goddamn cigarette.
Let's go to Cactus Club and order the garden burger for you.
Okay.
It's one of the best veggie burgers I've ever had.
Yeah, I don't really like bean burgers, so.
How many veggie burgers have you ate?
Me?
Yeah.
Like probably five.
So it's the top five.
Five. Yeah.
Top five.
Definitely top five.
Because
I don't want to eat a veggie burger. I want to eat a beef burger.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I have had some before. You would be a better critic. Anyways, this was fun.
Are we done? She's cutting us off.
I am.
You are German.
Yes. No, I'm Polish.
If you're Polish, you'll be doing shots of vodka, let shit slide, eating hot dogs.
Let's do our ratings for this wine for today. And Bryce, I'm going to start with you.
Two out of seven.
Yeah. He's having a dream. He's just having a dream. Bryce, 2 out of 7.
Two
Josh?
Out of seven.
I'm going to go with Bryce, 2 out of 7 on this guy. It's good.
That's good.
I would go 3.
There you go.
Yeah.
Three out of seven. This portion of the podcast is sponsored by Funtime Heat Sauce.
Thanks, Funtime. Our heat sauce arrived, by the way.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, I have some for you.
Sitting in the back.
That's what I ate with the craft dinner last night.
Oh, there you go.
Amazing.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everybody. We will see you next week.
I'm kind of a big deal.
That was the Mural Wine Podcast with Josh, Bryce, and Leah. Want to learn more about natural wine? Find us on the internet at muralwine.ca or on any social media platform. Thanks for listening.
I drank 3 bottles of Vigneto last week.